And then there's some levels where they turn the lights off on you. This thing gets really difficult, and it doesn't take long.
You turn the lights off on yourself.
Well, sure, but I mean, like, the game, like...
Welcome to New Game Plus. You're listening to a retro gaming podcast where three guys spend 7 days playing one old game, and then we talk about it. My name's Dustin.
My name's Kenny.
Nolan here.
And this is episode 193. We are, and always will be, first and foremost, an audio podcast.
That's true.
That is true.
But some of you might not know that we also produce some additional content on the side.
Kenny doesn't know that.
Little side hustle to our side hustle.
We're actually informing Kenny about it right now. Every once in a while, Nolan and I, and Kenny at times, produce some video content on YouTube and Twitch. In fact, Nolan, you have been streaming a lot of Fire Emblem Three Houses, not only lately, but today.
Yep. I played like 4 to 5 hours today.
Today on stream.
Yeah, maybe.
I've been streaming lately some Final Fantasy 14. Kenny, you probably don't even know that yet.
I don't even know if I knew that was a game.
Yeah, that's the MMO, dude.
It's one of 11 and 14 are not like mainline series, but they're both the online versions. I've never done them, the MMOs, and this is the first time I'm trying it, because you can play to the first 35 levels for free. So I'm doing it.
Are you enjoying it?
I am enjoying it. I'm going to even stream some tonight if you want to stick around.
What
and watch.
Level are you?
11, I believe.
What class?
Lancer.
What
moving
specialty?
Towards Dragoon. And I'm working on leatherworking. So Nolan, I love the questions, has been doing Fire Emblem Three Houses. Dustin's been doing Final Fantasy 14. Nolan and Dustin even did some Keep Talking and Nobody Explodes today, and it was fun.
Oh, I hate that I missed out.
And Kenny, what have you been streaming?
Nap time? No,
streaming. You know that you would probably have the most people watch you take a nap if you would let them.
It'd be like
that
a
would
weird
creep me out so
thing.
Hard.
Yeah, but it also creeps you out just that people knew that it was your birthday.
Yeah,
that's true. Now you're putting it on blast.
Everyone knows. Everyone wish Kenny a happy birthday and act like you really know him.
Okay.
If you haven't yet, go and follow and subscribe to those channels. And while you're at it, go and subscribe to our friend Ninja as well. Wait.
Yeah, we're tight with
wait.
Him.
Kenny, we got news to tell you about your good friend Ninja. big news this week. We barely talk about this guy on our channel. Not that we have anything against him. It's just we're in totally different markets.
Yeah,
although
totally
we are really good
Fortnite.
Friends. We are really good friends, though, and Ninja, one of Twitch's most popular streamers of all times, announced just a couple days ago that he's leaving the platform to stream exclusively on Microsoft's streaming platform Mixer.
What do you think about that, Kenny?
I mean,
Kenny has a lot of opinions about it.
I do have a lot of opinions on this. I think Microsoft probably did a really smart thing giving him a boatload of money to help move some people over from Twitch if they want to get in on this thing.
I agree. Kenny, not being in the realm or in the world, what's your estimate of how much you think Microsoft paid him?
Oh, man.
You have no
just
idea.
Guess.
I
just
don't.
Guess.
$3 million.
Okay.
More.
I we don't know, but there's
Sure.
I think minimum 10, probably more likely $20 or $30 million.
That's so crazy.
Ninja got paid $1 million by one of the game companies to play
Epic?
Their game for the first 3 days of it coming out. Apex Legends, I think.
Oh, sure. Yeah. That's right.
And so, like, if that's the case, I mean, and he probably makes $3 to $5 million just on Amazon Prime alone.
That many?
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Wow.
But all I'm saying is I think he probably made buckets of money going over.
Oh, yeah. Kenny, I don't know how big the bucket is, but I have no doubt it's a bucket.
Nolan and I have talked about it some. We too agree with you. Like, great for him. Like, you don't have to have loyalty to one platform, especially when it's the only platform that has virtually had no competition.
Yeah, since it sort of rise to prominence, it's been kind of the only one. I mean, there's exceptions, but not practically. So I like that competition's moving in. Like, Twitch has gotten a lot of flack lately for some of their decisions. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. Maybe they're vulnerable.
And Mixer has been really great about supporting smaller streamers, whereas Twitch kind of favors extremely, extremely popular ones. And so I think some people might be worried that Ninja is on Mixer now, but I don't know.
We did make a Mixer account just in case, yeah, we but we are still for now streaming over at Twitch. Again, it's twitch.tv/NGP podcast. We are going to stay there for now. We are proud of our friend Ninja as he goes over to Mixer. Can't wait to eventually have him on the show. But he's not only our friend, but you know what?
What?
He's our hero too. Like in our retro game of the week, H to the E to the R to the O.
Overview.
Helicopter Emergency Rescue Operation is the game that we played this week, shortened to Hero. And it's a 1984 Atari 2600 game. Very, very old.
Early boys.
One of the earliest.
You can't say very, very old about 1984.
For a video game.
Kenny, that's at this point. We haven't
really even been in the game for 10 years. This is like this is the crash, actually, where video games are like, we're probably not going to do video games
anymore.
This
is E.T.?
When was E.T.? Good point.
I don't know.
But Kenny, and Nolan, for that matter, guys, you want to do a podcast? I think it was 83, 84, 85 was like the big video game crash where it just didn't work. So yeah. I guess maybe E.T. was wrapped up in there, too.
Well, either way, 1984 is an old game, for sure. One of the oldest ones we've played, I think. And the Atari 2600 is a very old console. So that console is the one that's the joystick, the single joystick with the button. Like, that's the Atari. So it's also, like, a really famous retro game. I think true retro when I think Atari 2600.
So the console, not necessarily just the game.
Yeah, the console.
Yeah, got you.
So this game was developed and produced by Activision. And I was really shocked to hear that Activision's that old of a company.
Yeah.
Did y'all know that?
They had a part in the Tony Hawk, right? The Tony Hawk, Activision. And
they created Tony Hawk, yeah.
And a lot of other games, like they're still
Call of Duty
producing games today.
Well, they're partnered with freaking Blizzard now. Blizzard bought them. They're still around. And it's so I was kind of surprised to hear that they were even back then, but I guess that goes to show, like, you do it long enough, you eventually become successful and a big name.
Amen.
That'll preach. In this game, you control our hero. So Roderick Hero, often shortened to our hero.
I didn't
hero.
Get the R part of the joke until you
really?
Just said it.
So now you're proud of me?
No. I'm proud of Nolan.
What? Why of Nolan?
Because he made a better joke accidentally than you did with the forced transition.
Get a life. It is our... He didn't do anything except state a fact.
Well, either way, I just got it.
All right, Roderick.
You control Roderick Hero in this game, and you explore the depths of mineshaft. So here, let me break it down. Helicopter in Helicopter Emergency Rescue Operation is the helicopter that's attached to Roderick's backpack.
Or the propeller pack in the manual. So in the manual, they shorten it to prop pack. So you'll probably hear us use that cool lingo throughout this episode. Prop pack.
And a lot of the other cool lingo that's in that amazing manual
that you linked
in Discord. That
manual actually is great.
I read all of it.
Yeah, so propeller pack, prop pack, or just that helicopter. It's the guy's got a helicopter spinning.
Stowed away in his backpack.
Am I allowed to call it the backpack spinny flyer?
Ooh, I don't like that.
Yeah, you can't. You can't.
I can't.
No, you can't.
You can do whatever you want,
but you can't.
They turned it later into a straight up hover pack, or what are those things called?
Oh, yeah. Sega made it a jet pack in their version of the game,
which is inappropriate. You can't change that, especially when the first word of Hero is helicopter.
So you'd have to change it to Giro.
Yeah.
Jetpack.
Or Euro. I think it's Euro.
Anyways, so that's the H. The E in Hero stands for emergency, and that represents the miners that are stuck in these mine shafts and they need help.
Help!
The rescue, the R in Hero, is what you're doing as Roderick. You are going down and saving them. And operation is just a word that you know what it means. And they throw it in there because that makes the word hero. Because
it couldn't just be called her.
Her, yeah. It could, but, you know. So that's the gist of the game. But basically, you're going down and down and down in these mine shafts, fighting enemies, shooting them, and using your prop pack to navigate around lava pools and magma walls and spiders and all kinds of things.
Did we mention that you have a hat that shoots lasers?
So you get that from the book, I guess, but like, I don't know, I was just assuming he had a gun or something.
Yeah, I assumed he had a gun all week until I saw someone say it's out of his helmet, and I almost like called him out for it, and then I was like, hold on, and I went back and watched it. Yeah, it's coming straight out from its helmet. I mean, you only have like 4 pixels to look at anyways on the character model, so...
I honestly did not know this game existed at all, but that's probably not surprising. Atari 2600, I'm not familiar with very well. So is this Pong? Forgive me. Is this Pong?
No.
Okay.
I don't think so. It's okay. That era.
Well,
but I don't think Pong came out on the 2600.
Pong actually had like a console. I think Pong was one of the earliest consoles, the just being Pong. Okay. But this was Pitfall and like Asteroids, Frogger. I think even Gyrus. Some of the earlier Pac-Man was on this.
Man, I need to be better. I'm on a retro gaming podcast for crying
out loud. But that's hard, especially this early when it wasn't a part of our childhood.
I wasn't born.
I understand. When you look at lists of top Atari 2600 games, which I did this week, actually, it's weird to me. Well, it's interesting to me that you don't see... I didn't see this game in any of the lists.
I also checked a few lists, and I found it on some of them, but not on all of them.
You did? Oh, so you did find it on some of them.
I did, yeah. It was mentioned on one or two.
Because I found games like Space Invaders and Pitfall and games like that over and over again. But this game on the majority of the lists was absent, although I guess it did make some of them. So it's on some lists, not on the majority of them. So if you didn't know about it before coming into this week, that's not a bad thing. You're probably in the majority there.
Okay, good.
Gameplay.
As mentioned, you've got... just a few things at your disposal in this game. You've got your prop pack, that helicopter thing that you're moving around. Think about, again, you're using that kind of one-handled... it's not a controller, it's...
Joystick,
thank you. You've got that one...
I forgot what a joystick
is. Ancient technology.
Get a life. You've got that one-handled joystick to maneuver around using this prop pack. You've got your micro laser beam coming out of your helmet, which is that kind of like infinite pea shooter is basically what it is.
Yeah.
And then, whether or not we've mentioned it, you've got dynamite sticks.
Dynamite, absolutely. Which is the safest way to get miners out of a cave successfully, is to blow up a bunch
IRL.
Of dynamite.
Okay, no. So, yes, Kenny, you're a professional coming in. You're a rescue operator that's coming in to rescue these miners. And so you use sticks of dynamites on barriers that are preventing you from going forward and deeper into the dungeon.
Yeah.
There are like stone walls, like cave-ins. There are lava walls. At times there are water walls, but I don't know if you can blow those up. And I thought that the game did well at slowly teaching you the mechanics. They are limited mechanics. You just have a joystick and one button. But it does feel a tad bit unusual at the start, and I think through the first few levels, it kind of teaches you how to use the dynamite, how to control your prop pack, and how to take out enemies.
Yeah, because there's a little bit of complexity there. Your main button, your shoot, is actually firing that laser that you've got strapped to your head, but you've also got these bombs you've got to set, and so the way they do that is, when you're standing on the ground and you push down, you like drop a bomb at your feet, which I felt like was really intuitive. You got to be careful though, because that dynamite is explosive, go figure. And it will blow up rather quickly after you set it. So you got to drop your bombs, run out of the way, get to safety.
And you're limited on how many dynamite sticks you have.
Right. Like, you only have six.
Yeah. You probably just said that. You only have six. And so later on in stages, there are plenty of opportunities to use them, but if you use them on walls you shouldn't have, then you might not have enough dynamite sticks to get through to the, you know, miner that you're rescuing at the end.
Right. So a few of those mechanics wrapped up into one sounds really simple, and it is simple. That's what I liked about their execution on this game, is that the premise is very simple and easy to learn. I agree with you, Dustin. I thought the pacing was pretty solid. Like, the first couple of levels, you're just literally going down, right? And that's the point, is like, go down is the main point to find the miner. And so the first level, you literally just like go through a couple panes, screens, and then you get there. And then they slowly start introducing these concepts. I was so impressed at how later in the game they take these simple concepts and just kind of make them harder by limiting you. And it actually worked out really well.
By limiting you, and it becomes a lot like a maze, doesn't it? Like, and massive you have maze. Various paths to fall down, typically two, but sometimes it's probably a few more. And one is going to be, sometimes one is the right one and one is the wrong one, but sometimes one is the better one and the other is the less better.
Like, you'll have
one.
To use some resources on that path. It's almost like is it door number one, door number two? Because sometimes you'll have a couple paths.
So what I do like is that never is it instant death or failure. I mean, if you see a spider or snake in your path and you just jump into it, you're killing yourself in that act. But if the path is clear on the way down, you will not instantly die. So even if you go down, it's not like one door is death, one door is not. However, if you don't have quick reflex, which that's why it's a video game, then you will, because there will be lava nearby or there will be a bat nearby. So you have to kind of keep that joystick tilted up to really work well with that hover mechanic.
And it seems like that's not real hard. You're falling down these things and you can even fly. That should make it way easier. And sure, there's bats, but you have a laser. But the complexity comes in the execution, because your laser shoots directly from your head. Your helicopter, like, and in a straight line, you can't aim it, so you can't go up, down, you can't shoot the bat above you. You have to be directly in front of it. Your helicopter actually, and I felt like this was really neat.
This is the big one.
Oh, absolutely. It like reacts in ways that A, take gravity into account. So like, if you're not flying, you're falling, which is great. But then it also takes a little while to lift you off. So when you lift up like you want to go, your helicopter comes out and sort of starts to spin, but it takes you a little while to get up. And so when you've got that mechanic of time that you're having to sort of lead actions on the screen and shooting, but only things directly in front of you, and going side to side, and have these enemies coming at you that get faster and faster as the levels progress. And then there's some levels where they turn the lights off on you. This thing gets really difficult and it doesn't take long.
You turn the lights off on yourself.
Well, sure. But I mean, like, the game, like, gives options of the lights not being on if you hit one of those lanterns.
Right.
And so it gets real difficult.
And on top of all of that, there's a timer. So I guess it's just your fuel and your
power
meter. Pack.
Yeah,
probably
it's your battery.
It's called power. It's a power bar. And it's as soon as you start moving in a level, it starts to deplete. And so, when you get into the later stages where it really gets mazy and kind of hard to find your way around, that's where that time, I started feeling that time. Like, in the early stages, who cares? I didn't even notice. I thought it was health or something. Right. Or not health.
And you do have a certain amount of lives. And so after you die, you start right there on that same level. You can get more for every, like, I don't know, 10,000, 100,000 points
20,
you get. 20,000. Okay. So I was close. But going back to what Kenny said there about that kind of hover mechanic, I really think that that is the big thing here in Hero.
1984.
It isn't immediately responsive. You're not pressing up and immediately going up, which you do. It's not like, you know, in most games, probably this time and definitely in the future, like in the past 10, 20 years, you press up or you press a button and you're jumping, right? And, but sure. In this game, there's not really a jump. You don't press up even and shoot skyward. It's like, it's emulated. It's they're creating this effect, but it's like a real helicopter backpack, which I know from experience. And
I knew you had one.
It has to compensate for your weight as it rises. So as Kenny completely mentioned and did it well, you're pressing up and it's taking a few seconds as the propellers spin to lift you up. Likewise, there are other times as you're going through these mazes and the stages progress where you're having to maneuver our hero, Roderick, like around tight gaps, like where lava's below you, cavern is right above you, and so you have to drop down and then catch yourself by pressing up again, swing over to the left to get through it, and then back up. So it's mastering that mechanic is key to being good at this game.
Also, you better not get touched.
Oh, you die. You get touched.
You die. It's one of those games. And so at times it felt incredibly punishing to me, like just barely a pixel off, like needing to bomb one of the lava walls. You can't touch the lava walls, but you need to get past it. Needing like getting as close as you can to put the dynamite and then like run off really quick or float across water. I mean, I died so much because I accidentally touched it.
The worst is when they'd have a lava wall that was on a like narrow platform.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about.
So you had to like fly over to the wall, not fly too far, land on the platform, drop a bomb, and then get off of it and far enough away for it to not blow up on you when you had to like fly. Oh, it was terrible.
And while there's other enemies like bats that are flying nearby. Yeah, absolutely. And then even at times, as you get later, there are water sections where there's little rafts that are already in the water and you have to land on that raft and it shoots to the left or shoots to the right to get you under tight fitting areas. But again, you can't just wait till you get to the end and press up, because then the raft will be shooting back towards the direction that it just came. Yep. So all of these things add different levels of complexity as you go on. And that's just the first 15 levels where you're kind of experiencing all those things.
I just want to point out, like, for an Atari 2600 game in 1984, we're still talking about like new mechanics as over the last few minutes. And to me, that kind of speaks to how deep the game kind of goes. Just, I mean, as deep as they could with what they had. It's kind of impressive to me that this game even had the concept of exploration. Oh, like these kinds of games were not explore based games. They were jump, like Frogger, right? Like jump over this one thing is the point of the game.
Even during this time, you're typically just playing a level on a screen. You're not going to multiple levels on one or multiple screens in one game. That's kind of unheard of.
Yeah, I definitely liked how they did moving between screens and not letting you know what was in the next screen. Now, functionally, because you don't know and you're having to do lots of that exploration, and some of that exploration goes south really fast or you waste bombs. Functionally, this game suffers from some of the things that a lot of games of this era did, and that is you have to just play it to learn it. Which is fine, but without really memorizing layout on some of these, I think it, at least on later levels, would be really hard to effectively explore the whole level and still get out in time without doing some, like, die and learn it and repeat. And that's always a little unfortunate.
Yeah. So much.
There's definitely learning in this game. Like you have to play it enough to know the stages. And again, like I mentioned, one of the key things if you're coming back and playing this game is anytime you drop down to a new screen, hold up, because you don't know what's going to be under you.
Exactly.
But it is learning, especially later, like Nolan mentioned, when your power meter is just quickly dwindling. If you take the wrong path, you're not going to make it to the end. So it is, but that's what these games are, right? You rinse and repeat, play again and again and again. Thankfully, you're not having to put in a quarter for each time you play, although I think this would have worked as an arcade game as well. Yeah. It's nice that it's nice that you kind of just get your one round, one gameplay. But then as you die, lose all your life, start over again, the cool thing is it's the same stages in the same order, right? Yeah. I don't think it's randomized in any way. I think same stages. And so you can learn them. And it's pretty easy to learn the first 10, I think. And then, you know, when you get to the other ones.
Difficulty ramps like crazy at that point.
Yeah, it does. It does.
Now,
how far did you get, out of curiosity? So I can gauge my own.
I can
skill.
Actually pull. Like, I still have mine up. If you give me a second, Kenny, do you know yours?
Sure. I don't know. I think it was early to mid teens somewhere.
Yeah. It does like from one level to, I think it's like 11 or something. It gets like noticeably crazy. The enemies start moving way faster. Like way faster, and then they get cheeky with you. And when you y'all have been mentioning transitioning to the screen below and like hold up so you can see it, they started making you go through like narrow paths, but you touch a lamp and the lights go off immediately. There's no way to avoid it.
It's
and
brutal.
I thought that was cool.
Or moving lava barriers that you have to avoid as you're falling down, and the timing's like insane.
They move
crazy
the
complex.
Doors. Like they move left and right or like slam together and you have to fall down between them. But one of the things is when that level is dark because you broke the lantern, when you drop a dynamite and it explodes, it momentarily lights up the freaking level.
Yes.
Yeah, which is so smart.
I didn't notice that until you just said it, but it totally does. And that's crazy.
Who comes up with that? All right. So I think I got to 18 actually, but
wow,
I was using save states.
Still. Of course you were. This game's hard, dude.
Yeah.
I got to 14, I think, or 15, 14, 15.
So I didn't get here, but I did get to play a little bit of 17, and that's because the game has some other options as well. When you're like setting up the game, you can choose a like mode to start the game. And so you can start on level 1, or you can choose to start on like level 5 or 10. I don't know what all they break down to. But one of those modes, as I was scrolling through, jumps you to a way late level. And I didn't realize that at first and thought it was just like different like color variations of the levels or something, and jumped to, you know, like mode 5, which starts you on I think level 17, and it's magma walls and it's brutally difficult, and you know the enemies coming at you real fast, and even that was a neat thing that they gave you a set of options. Like, sure, you've played the game a whole bunch, you don't need to do the first couple of levels again, you've got them on lockdown now, jump to the levels that are challenging for you.
It is a nice feature. I wouldn't do it immediately. Learn the mechanics first.
Don't.
Learn how to maneuver the prop pack, and then maybe if you're feeling cheeky, drop it down.
Drop it low.
Aged.
It came out in 1984. Done.
That's early.
Dude, like... Yeah, it aged well. We've all had fun with it, right? I mean,
well, it aged well, but being so old and then being an Atari game, the thing that bums me out is that is hard to emulate today. And so most likely all of us played with a controller or a keyboard, which is fine. And I think it emulates well, but you miss playing with the original Atari joystick.
True.
Yeah, which there's definitely a different experience there.
Like, and that's got to be the perfect console to play this on, because with the prop pack, that whole helicopter thing, and then having that vertical joystick in your hand.
Yeah.
Let's not get dirty, but that is like, that's the best way to control a helicopter propeller.
Yeah. Sure. I just think that it's so insane that Activision developed and published it, thought to do exploration on the Atari 2600. I don't know. Again, like, y'all have to forgive me, like hardcore retro people. I don't know the catalog super well, but like just the fact that there's giant levels to navigate kind of blew me away this week. I was not expecting that at all.
Yeah, gameplay complexity was definitely more than I was expecting for as simple as the game looked initially. So,
yeah,
you know, I mean, there was a lot to explore there, you know, lots of depths to dig into. Forgive the mining puns. I will say, and I know this is Atari 2600, but graphics on this, though the utility of them is fine and it's always clear what things are, aren't super overwhelming. Now, that's the reality of, you know, the 2600 hardware to some degree, and it doesn't like get in the way of everything. They communicate what they want to clearly, and it's clear what's going on the screen. But they did port this game to some other systems of the same time or around the same time that have exactly the same gameplay but significantly better looking graphics, where like the caves actually have stuff hanging down from the ceiling, the stalactites, mites. I forget mites, which way it goes.
We never learned.
We never learned, and it doesn't
matter.
Oh, have
we had this conversation before?
We have in other games. But we're like, we're in our 50s, and so it doesn't matter anymore. But
it doesn't.
So have you, did you see the other versions? Because I actually, this week, I found a YouTube video that went that takes you through every single version that came out.
I didn't look at all of them, but I looked at a few.
Yeah, Commodore 64 and a few others. So this game, by the way, was ported to probably 8 to 12 other systems throughout the time. Even in like modern systems, in like their retro, you know, replays, that's not what they're called. Yeah. But yeah, in their vaults and stuff like that, you can play this game with others. I actually think that this original Atari 2600 version is far superior to the others.
Really?
Sure, really?
Yeah. I do, by far. You get other colors in the newer ones. You get, yeah, stalactites or mites. You get the actual visuals that it is in a cave. Some of the water looks like water. Some of the lava looks like lava. And you don't get that in the Atari 2600 with the 8-bit. Is that what it is? With the 8-bit graphics, yeah, at that 8-bit point. However, I think that the graphics age better with that simplicity of color scheme and design and all of those things that you don't get in some of the newer ports.
Well, I'll give you one thing. Like, you know what everything is. The magma flashing red's clearly dangerous. The, you know, the water is blue. You can see. I mean, I didn't know that was a tentacle coming out of the water at first until I looked it up, but I knew it was bad. So. Right. Yeah, the simplicity does work for it. I'm with you. I liked the look a lot of the Commodore version. I didn't play it though, so I can't fully speak to, oh, it's better. I just thought I agree with Kenny. I thought it looked pretty good.
I would say that steer clear of the Sega versions because,
oh, really?
It may look or sound better. Because they actually give the stages musical tracks, which are actually really good. No, they're really good.
What?
Like actual tracks. It's super interesting. I need to link it to you so you can listen to it because it's like, this is actually good video game music.
Yeah, send it.
And then huge visual improvements in the Sega version. My only beef is that they switched out the helicopter backpack for a traditional jetpack. And which I mentioned earlier, but that's inappropriate. You're not supposed to do that. It's helicopter emergency rescue operation. Don't give them a jetpack. It's not a Euro.
Yeah, true. Something that was super noticeable though to me and felt extremely retro, and I felt it multiple times playing or doing this podcast, but is the difficulty curve. So yeah, it ramps up nicely, but when it ramps, God help you.
It ramps really hard.
It was very challenging for me. And it might go back to what you were saying, Dustin, about not having the original system/controller. Like, the latency even might come into play there, like not playing on a television, like an old TV. But it was challenging. And at times it kept me from like progressing to actually get to some substance to talk about the game. But
yeah. My understanding is it was challenging even originally.
Yeah, it's
like
hard.
It's not all just like, you know, if we'd had a joystick, it would have been easy. Like, this is a tough game, and they made it to me. When you only have 20 levels, you really need to keep a nice linear curve of, you know, ramping curve of difficulty, whatever the shape. And they did that, but that just means that those later levels are super tough. Though, if you can get through them, you should be really proud of yourself.
I will say that being such an old game, it's one of the easier ones to play nowadays. You can go to archive.org and you can play it on its various ports. You can play it in browser. You can like, it's super easy to get a hold of this game. The harder thing would be to play on original hardware for sure. But if you want to play this game, you can probably have it up and going within 3 minutes.
Yeah, it's been included in a number of the Atari re-release kind of collections and things that have tried to make sure that experience is as close as you can be on today's stuff to feeling original.
Final thoughts.
At the end of each and every one of our episodes, we determine whether or not the game gets our vote for New Game Plus status, which is our general thumbs up or thumbs down. Requires two-thirds of the vote to swing one way or the other. Birthday Boy will begin.
Yeah, so I think it's always important to remember games kind of in context, but ultimately they need to be fun to play today regardless. And despite this being an older in our spectrum game of games, and that coming with some automatic just, you know, short amount of content because they only have so much room, simplicity in graphics, etc., this game ended up being pretty fun. It was challenging, but never felt impossible. It was clear what was going on. When I first picked it up, it felt a little boring, but then as I learned the exploration and the challenge of, like, got to avoid these guys and have to know and explore and be performant, I don't know. I think for the system, it probably was one of the better games that came out, and there's lots of those. And so I think this is one people ought to know about and can absolutely get some enjoyment out of playing today. So, yeah, New Game Plus for me.
What about you, Nolan?
I was surprised to hear y'all say that this game wasn't on, like, top list. I didn't take the time to look, but I just assumed that it was. And so I'm kind of surprised, and I'm curious to play what the games that are on those lists. But I think that before this game, I didn't really have a respect for the Atari and, like, the Commodore 64, Apple II, like, that, those consoles. And of course, it's because I was born way after anyways, but this game really, really impressed me and makes me, like, kind of admire a lot, actually, the developers of that era. So it definitely gets New Game Plus for me. I actually had fun playing a game this old. So I recommend people check it out for sure, especially with how easy it is to play.
I agree with you both. I kind of hate it because this will make the fourth episode in a row where we unanimously said yes for New Game Plus status.
Screw it.
Like, it even, like, we're going to give you an honest feedback of the game regardless. But I was hoping there'd be some contention this week. But Nolan, like, I agree. I haven't played them all, but I have played a good amount, especially the ones that are in the list. This deserves to be in the top, at least top 10, if not top 5, Atari 2600 games of all time.
Now, I think that's a bold statement, just because there's so many Atari games, and that's part of the reason that I don't think you do see it on some lists. It was not as popular as some of the games that sold millions of copies, and it just has some really steep competition. Like, the Atari was out for so long, and yeah, I know there's some duds, but there were some really well-done games that it has to claw
duds.
Up.
Yes, okay. But very few of those games do exploration like this one did, and maze and challenge none of them do that. Your helicopter backpack, you know, that's just a bonus, but I don't know. I found this game super charming, super intriguing. I had a lot of fun playing this week. I could have sunk hours into this game back in 1984 if I hadn't been negative something years old. I'm sure, yeah. Kenny, you played it a lot as a budding adult at that time. But I give it my vote, which means Hero is New Game Plus certified. What did you think? We heard from a few of our listeners this week. They either emailed us at ngppodcast@gmail.com, went on to ngppodcast.com and just sent in their thoughts there, or through our Discord channel, the commentary part of our Discord channel. Garlisle said, "I'm somewhat impressed by this game, but that probably speaks more to my expectations of games from pre-NES hardware. Contrasted to other games on early systems, actual level progression that introduced new elements was far from common. It's definitely a step up from much of the Atari's library. Unfortunately, Super Mario Bros. Came out a year before this, and contrasted to what SMB and the NES were doing to change the face of gaming, Hero feels like old hardware and old school design being pushed to its limits by its best staff, mm-hmm. and still coming up short. The magic just isn't there."
Oh.
I like the comparison of timeline to timeline. I don't know that I realized Super Mario Brothers was already out at this point.
So no, I'm looking now. Super Mario Bros. Came out in 1985 in Japan.
It's still pretty comparable era.
It's still comparable. I'm trying to think, did Mario Bros. Come out?
I mean, Mario Bros. Was out on
was
Atari.
The 83 arcade game.
There we go. Okay. So
that is, but that's very simplistic, one level, one stage
right.
type
yeah,
situation.
That's not the jump that was NES and Super Mario Bros. And not, like, don't get me wrong, that was happening right around the corner. I think it's probably still fair for him to make that comparison.
Well,
but I don't know that they were quite directly competing.
Right. I would say if Hero came out a year or two later, then I would agree more. But being that it's still a predecessor, I don't know about that.
Yeah.
Hookshot wrote in and said, it's surprising what this game pulls off with the joystick and one button setup of the 2600. It's rather complex and gives you a lot to consider while tackling each level. Did I pick the right path? Uh-oh, now it's dark and I can't see where I'm going. Great, I just blew myself up again. The only problem I had was the input with my SNES controller. I'll be curious if you guys had any issues with falling too quickly and dying constantly without meaning to. The 2600 wasn't a powerhouse, but this game impressed me with its depths. Huh? I think it probably deserves NGP status.
Yes, I had so many input problems.
But not because, I don't think that's because of the game's fault. I think it's us getting used to it. And I think the name of the game is falling into lava over and over until you learn better.
Yes.
No, it's
the unfortunately it is.
The name of the game is Hero.
Don't.
Nate wrote in and said, I have been trying out Hero and am fairly surprised by how fun it is. This is my first exposure to this title. It's a very simple concept, but with enough things to do to make it interesting. The floating hovering mechanic is actually pretty neat too. It gives a good sense of that hovering feeling since the jump isn't immediate. I like that the levels are like a simple maze where there is only one path that is usually better than the others. I need to play more before I make a complete final judgment on it. But if a person was okay with simple early 80s Atari games, this would be a good one to try out. Does it survive forward 35 years? 35?
I know. Yeah.
Golly.
Yeah.
Or so, and get NGP status from me? I'd say yes, because it's one of the better Atari games I've ever played. That all said, I still think this era of games is a tough entry point for many young people or people younger than 30 years old. So I don't know if everyone else's feelings would be the same.
Hard agree with that last
completely
statement.
Good statement.
Hard agree
there.
Because I would say that I am in that group. I'm 20 something, 7, and I have always been, it's always been pretty hard for me to jump into these games. So that might be part of why I was so impressed was just how easy it was.
There's a pretty practical hard line just in terms of quality of games that happens when the NES releases.
Oh yeah, NES
absolutely
I think is much more
noted.
Palatable.
Change
for
the world. It really
modern.
Did.
It's available, like it's accessible for your younger gamers, modern gamers even. But when you go before then, you're asking people to do a lot.
Yeah. Can you imagine if they'd released an Atari 2600 Mini?
How good.
And seven people. All the old people playing
like
again.
There's a reason that's where a lot of people sort of start thinking about gaming existing, even though there's a ton of good games before that. And I think it's fun that we get to see some of those and give them credit.
For sure. We've got one more that wrote in. And by the way, I love that so many people wrote in over Hero, an Atari 2600 game. Like, absolutely great.
A lot of helicopter fans.
Pot Soy says, this was the first game my younger brother was better than me at. Disappointing, I know, and man, it is hard to go back to the Atari today. Watching clips on YouTube brought back so many memories of choosing the wrong hole and turning out the lights, being sandwiched by lava walls, smiling wall snakes, and tentacles dragging you underwater. Yeah. Easily top three on my favorite Atari games list and absolutely a must play if you pick up a 2600.
Nice.
We put it in his top three.
Yeah,
well, sure,
I like that. I want to know what the other
500
two.
Plus Atari titles.
You don't have to play all of them, Kenny. See the door out that's and leave an so AB mean. Conversation.
Okay.
Tree.
You know what? I also prefer jetpacks to helicopters.
You would, you Euro loving sick son of a gun. Thank you guys for writing in. As always, you can send in your commentary. We love to include your thoughts as a part of the show. For now, we're going to set aside helicopter emergency rescue operation to the side and randomly select our next retro game. We do have a retro master list. I'm not going to tell you where to find the link because you'll keep sending in games and I have to add them all the time and you're dumb.
We have
got
enough.
So many. From that retro master list, we're going to select the game that we're going to be playing for the next 7 days, and it is... a 1997 game that was released in Japan, published by Enix.
Only in Japan?
And then it came out in North America and everywhere else by Nintendo, published by Nintendo.
You said Enix, so I'm on board. I don't care what you say next.
Enix Nintendo came out for the Nintendo 64. I threw those things out at first because that's going to throw you off. Came out for the Nintendo 64. It's a side-scrolling platform video game developed by Treasure. The game is called Yuke Yuke Troublemakers, or over here it was called Mischief Makers.
What is going
on? Mischief Makers. Or Mischief? How do you spell mischief? No, it's the same thing, right?
Mischief.
Okay. We are playing Mischief Makers for the Nintendo 64.
Don't ever say it like that.
Mischief Makers? Mischief, I've never heard of this. And also, Enix, what are you talking about?
I don't know. What are you talking about, Willis?
I'm not talking. I'm confused, but I'm going to play it. For a week.
It was the first 2D side-scrolling game for the 64.
I'm down. I love that.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, Kenny, you want to play with us?
I'll think about it.
Okay. All right. Find a copy of Mischief Makers, stick it in your Nintendo 64, and let's play. Should I do that each week?
No.
We'll see what the fans have to say.
No, we won't. Stick it in your N64.
If you like that,
play.
Like, subscribe.
Go to ngppodcast.com. Scroll down just one little scroll and click join us in Discord. We have a great Discord community, and we'd love for you to be a part of it.
We also want to say a big thank you to all of our patrons who support us on patreon.com.
Yes.
You know who you are, probably you because you get some sweet bonus content.
Ooh.
But we especially want to thank Amarlian for upping his pledge amount.
Yay.
We want to say a humongous thank you to Ben for becoming our newest producer level supporter. So,
hey.
Ben, thanks so much. Also, whatever noises Dustin just made, sum up how we feel about you.
I think we need those air horns.
Yeah,
oh,
we
do. Oh, no, those are super obnoxious.
We don't use soundboard effects enough on this podcast. Everyone does.
What? I don't know why we have a soundboard. We have you, Nolan. You can
do
all our sound effects.
We need a laugh track.
Oh, my God, a laugh track would be so funny.
No, I don't like it. You'd use it at my expense way too often.
But
regardless.
It would go perfect right there.
Regardless.
Round of applause.
Big thanks to our established producers who've been with us. Antonin, Bill, Dear Baby, Garlisle, Grim, Corey, Maxima, Zach, and Zion.
Ooh.
You guys are included in our list of best people.
And also when something romantic happens or someone's flirty, they go, woo.
Yeah, we're still on sound effects.
Hey, you can go to our website, ngppodcast.com, and find the link to all of our social medias and follow us there. Again, like I mentioned at the beginning, Twitch and YouTube, where we do regular video content. You can listen to us directly on any podcast provider of your choice. Make sure you subscribe so that you are the first to get new NGP episodes. And while you're at it, leave a kind rating and review. This episode was edited and produced by our friend Tom Tate. Join us next week as we play Mischief Makers. Until then, I'm still Dustin.
It's Mischief.
I'm Rod Hero.
And cha-ching! That's another sound effect. This has been, everybody, New Game!
Please get a soundboard, dude. Tom, please add them in, at least for this episode. That'd be so good.